You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Michiel Schuurman. Now we're talking.
This is Type Radio.
Now we are talking.
Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
You listen to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the AGI Open Conference in Rotterdam. It's September 24th, 2019, and our guest is Michiel Schuurman. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have a standard first question. You probably know it. Are you religious?
Am I religious? Yes, I kind of was prepared for this question, but I still don't
all
know the answer.
Life. All your life.
This is yeah, this is it. No, no, I'm not religious, but I do think we are all part of something. Like, it's important to be part of something and to feel part of something. And that could be a religious feeling, I guess, but I'm not religious.
Right.
Yes.
So you believe, but you're not religious.
Yeah, not in a God, but I believe in a community and that we're part of it, yes. Yeah.
And do you have rituals?
Oh yeah, tons of it.
Oh, we've got all night.
Oh, but they're all more like nervous ticks.
Okay. Oh, I'm curious.
Yes. I don't know. There's so much. I don't know.
The worst one.
The worst one. Rituals. I do have a thing where I need to put everything on the table. So during the evening, everything will be neat and, you know, mm-hmm. tidy and stuff like that. So that maybe is a ritual. I don't know. I feel of all kind of nervous ticks and things, but rituals, I don't know. No, not really for pumping myself up for work or something. So not like a conscious thing, but I guess I do everything exactly the same every day.
Exactly the same, like, and do you get nervous if it doesn't work?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
And what is the exactly the same?
I don't know, everything has to be, you know, I have to have that one cup that I drink my coffee from, and that one, you know, favorite plate, and then.
But do you contemplate like what might happen if you don't, or is it just like, are you aware?
If too many of those things are off, because yeah. I'm not that super nervous about. But if too many things are off, then I get a bad day.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like superstition, but more like, okay, now
it's
I need
more
to
like signs that it's a bad day.
No, it's more like a control. We need to have control of stuff.
But when you talk about control and looking at your work, do you feel that is also very controlled?
Yeah, super. Yeah. I need to find if I'm working at something which I find is interesting or what I think is good, I try to make some sort of. I have a playing field that could be like a record cover or a poster, and then I have a series of nature laws that are happening in that poster, and then everything has to go according to those laws, and then I'm kind of trying to fill it in as good as possible. So if everything is falling, everything has to fall, if everything is casting a shadow, then everything is casting shadows, just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is a way where I can kind of lose that control a little bit, like, you know, or have that control in a sort of a healthy way.
And are accidents an option?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm not if stuff happening at my computer because I'm doing it clumsy or something, mm-hmm. then I let myself inspire from that. So
okay.
I start with some very rigid laws, mm-hmm. and then I start doing it, and most of the time I'm really impatient, and then stupid stuff happens on my screen, and then I think maybe that could be what the whole poster is about, and then I start focusing on that aspect and meander to where all the accidents and all the stuff lead. Is that make that
no,
sense?
Yeah, No, it's clear,
Yeah.
I recognize it even.
Yeah.
So that's if I'm in a good phase, then that is like how my work works out, and making patterns for textiles, that really allows me to do that, because I start with a clean thing. There's no information that needs to be. I don't have to communicate anything. So I start with a clean sheet, and then I.
What are briefings for?
For Flisco.
Yeah, for Flisco, or for patterns, or, you know, or for packaging, for Lush, for example. How does the question begin?
For Lush, Lush was really fun, because there was a person that just wanted me to make something fun.
Yeah.
And after one or two phone calls or emails, I was like, oh, this is a nice client. So I just kept on going. But that was like a lot of accidents happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm going with that. Normally, I would also clean it up after a while, because this is like a 3-4 day thing. You know, yeah. I have 3-4 days to make this. So then,
and are you directed for color, for example?
No. Yeah,
in that sense, you are. It is you.
Yeah. I could do whatever I want. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. But if I make a pattern for Flisco, I have like a month time to make mm-hmm. something. Then I also clean up a little bit. So now you see everything, like one big accident. The whole Lush mm-hmm. thing is like one big giant accident. If it would be a pattern for textile, I would clean it up afterwards and make it. Better and better and improve.
But for textiles, are there certain? I mean, are there? Color trends, or is that also something you are?
Oh yeah. At Flisco, where I work for this factory, they do have colors that are en vogue at that certain period. So mm-hmm. they give me a palette of like 20 colors, something like that, and then I can move within that palette. But there's not a briefing. Not really a briefing for what it should be done. So that's a personal thing.
But these 20 colors, do you have to use them? Or is that like just optional, like these are in fashion now? And if you could...
No, well, it's not only that they are in fashion, but the factory is actually loaded with those colors. So all the machines are loaded with the color. So it's a practical thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like they choose, and then everything runs from those colors, kind of. So, and it's also to make... All the textiles from all the designers, when they come out, they're also like a palette of different choices and they fit well together.
And where does your color inspiration come from? Because the way you use color, I mean, I can't disassociate you from color. Like if I think of you.
That's weird, because I was known as a black and white guy. But I'm screen printer also. Mm-hmm. And then you learn how to put colors together. And make the most of it, you know. Like I was always going for maximum contrast. Used to go for that, mm-hmm. like blue and red and stuff like that. And after a while, you start putting in more colors. And then I just wanted to make sure that everything is popping out. And when you do that and you look at it more analytically, then you start having a feel for this. And these days I have the feeling I can just. Put in color mm-hmm. and it will be all right, which is just like a really nice feeling. Like you know, like after a few years you might have a nice handwriting. Mm-hmm. I have that with color now. Like I feel pleasant with using color. But there's a lot of analytic years before that.
And your inspiration, where does it
come from? I like solving like tiny problems, like now I'm also almost a year or more trying to make the perfect marble in the computer, like making one, you know, a marble. And it's such a simple thing to try, but it's really hard to do it with the least amount of effects that you can have. So it's a really hard thing to get it right. So that, I kind of get lost in that kind of sort of inspirational things, like how does shadow really work, or how does light really reflect on something. And then I look at a lot of stuff and then I try to kind of analyze, oh, this is how it works, and then I use it abstractly in my work. Does that make sense?
And you two try to sort of technically reconstruct that kind of effect.
Yeah, exactly. Till the point there, I think that one of my best tools is using the correct words in Google. I was interested in soap bubbles for a while, and I was kind of trying to, how do the colors work in a soap bubble? Mm-hmm. It's just not that, it's quite hard actually how it works. So I'm looking and looking and looking, and then I found one little picture, exactly what I needed, like a gradient picture with every, all the nanometers.
Yeah.
And then yeah, that's gold. I put that into a little folder in my computer that says ideas. And then I have that. Yeah. And then I can, you know, can endlessly go to that folder and take stuff from there. Yeah. So I also have a, like a perfect sine wave in Illustrator, which you cannot get because that a sine wave over a circle are things that are you cannot make in Illustrator correctly because they're false in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a collection of these kind of things that, and I get very excited.
Yeah, I can see it. I can feel it.
I get very excited about these little physics things that I find and you know, pulling apart a sort of a thing that you see and getting one aspect of it and trying to get it right. And also maybe try to get it a little bit clumsy because I don't really care, strangely enough, to portray it correctly. I just want to know how it works, and then if I find it, do some stuff with it, and then you know, get bored after a while.
Yeah, and then move on.
Move on to something else. Yeah, and then a small collection like that.
What is your first graphic or typographic memory?
That's a good one. It's not really my first, but I'm always really. My father passed away a few years ago. But he put me into the direction of graffiti, and I've never asked him why. Like there was graffiti all around my house, and he just one day he pushed me on the street with a little notebook, and he said, "Why don't you copy everything that you see on the walls on the street?" I was really? Like, "Okay, sure, Dad, do everything."
But what was his background or his?
He was a very artistic man, but he didn't have an artistic profession. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of his own art in the house, and he was always making sure that me and my brother, get fed with art in a way. To get back to that was like a typographic memory because I had to make those letters.
Being sent out on the street
to copy the graffiti. Yeah.
Do you have those drawings?
No. I just cleaned out the entire house of my parents, and I didn't find them.
Okay.
No.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But
yeah.
So you also never heard it from your father why he did.
No, I never asked that, which is stupid. When the graffiti movie came out, Star Wars, maybe you know it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He it was in Germany first in Europe. There was the first screening on television. He called out to, "Hey, you should come downstairs." You know, it was in the middle of the night for my feeling. I was like a small kid. And then he showed me.
Maybe he was secretly a graffiti artist.
Oh, that would be so great.
He never told you. And suddenly you find his tag and this.
Well, he was really pissed off when he had to get me from the police station.
Oh, really? You got caught?
Yeah, I started doing graffiti, of course. So yeah.
Well, yeah, okay, but you got caught. Not everybody gets caught. Oh, yeah.
I got caught.
You're still paying the fine?
No.
Ah, okay.
No, I was a little bit. No, that was okay.
Yeah?
Could lie my way through a little bit. Yeah.
You said your father told you to do it?
That would be nice.
That would have been a good excuse.
Okay. And so there's the memory, and then from there, that's how you were interested to go into design? I mean, what?
Well, that's Donald's fault in a way.
Yeah?
No, I started, after graffiti, I started making flyers because I got into the music scene that was kind of connected with graffiti, hip-hop, and house. Eventually, I'm really happy to seen the house scene grow in my city. Yeah. I'm really proud of having that part of me, you know, seeing...
Your city? Which
well,
city
in Amsterdam, there
in
was...
Amsterdam.
A house was coming. And so I was really happy that I could make flyers for these guys. And that was the first time I came in contact with printers and color separation and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I was a huge fan of Donald.
Yeah?
Yeah, really, like really.
He told me before, yeah.
Like we collected all his work, and then we were like, oh, how does this guy know that these two colors make another color? So we stole a lot of your color computers.
Yeah. And I stole like some color from Piet Schreuders.
Oh, really?
He was also like a king in like...
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
It's a green and magenta, and then it would be really almost black, and I'm like, what? That doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I remember that.
And then you figure it out, and you use it in one of your own first flyers, and it's like, oh, it's brown. It's not. No.
But you said you were known as a black and white guy.
Yeah.
That's what you said earlier. was that then you went through a black and white phase, or how?
That was because I was working at a copy store, and my first set of my first clientele was not having a lot of money, so we only had budget for black and white. So I, for a while, I specialized in doing everything in black and white, which I really loved, like in a grayscale, so not entirely making wild things with only black and white copiers.
Yeah.
And then I was actually manager of this copy store, and then I quit that job, so I had not access to that material anymore. So I went to screen printing, and then I was like, okay, now might also be a good time to dive into color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
And were you, sorry, I'm now interviewing both of you, but were you aware of Michiel's
flyers? No, I had seen some flyers of Michiel, but I didn't make the connection that he was stealing from me.
Did you design, do you still design flyers? Or is that something, do people do this now?
No, it's all online, like marketing.
Oh, no flyers?
Flyer scene is dead, in
a way.
Used
to be this network of like shops, like clothing stores and record shops and skate stores, and they'd have these stacked, the whole window would be filled with like event flyers.
Yeah, but there stuff. I still see flyers.
But yeah, but they're not, there was really eventful stuff, like printed on sandpaper, I can remember, and like you would really go for that. Making something spectacular.
So did you collect them?
Yeah.
Do you still have them?
No.
Also that? You got rid of everything?
Yeah, that's so bad. No, I don't know where they are.
Ah, okay, so there might be somewhere.
But my best friend still has the collection. Like, I'm so jealous of that.
okay.
Yeah. There's still some collectors that I see. Basically, sometimes there's this historical flyer exhibit, and then there's a couple of guys who just collected everything, and they still have them, and they even organize them and archive them, so
a huge scene, and very colorful and very expressive, and everything. Can also remember the depth was coming, you know, like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
That was also like a revolution in Flyerland, because they made really in your face graphics. I always followed those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They were making flyers. That was a huge influence.
Wow. No, I'm not very familiar.
Well,
with
it's
the flyer.
Actually like it's like the word subculture is really sort of valid here.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it's really,
really
like there were people who knew, and there were people who had no idea.
And people that didn't care, and just coming to these parties anyway because you knew. But like it was like, you know, like the Mercedes star on the hood. It was like the status symbol of a good party was a good flyer in a way. Like.
You so had the artists were dependent on you also. I mean, the people that were running
the musicians,
the organized. Musician.
Yeah. It you gave it to somebody, and then you knew that there was a new party.
No, but I mean, they dependent on you in the sense that if you were a really good flyer person, you could really make or break that event.
In a way, yeah, because depth was really making a lot of noise. When they came out with their flyers, that was really doing something for those evenings. Like, people were actually coming because of flyers, and maybe those donuts too.
Wow.
Because they were really good, yeah.
So, to go back to your work, I'm curious, when do you stop? Like, when is the end of a piece? Like, when are you happy with it? Because I can imagine a feeling of endlessness if it comes to a pattern. Where is it?
No, I'm working towards a goal. I'm not an artist who makes autonomous work. I don't think you said it, but I do have like an idea that I'm working towards something, and so there's this finish line, and it kind of depends on several things whether I make that finish line or not. And I never go. I'm also a little bit of a lazy person, but I don't. When it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
I'm not. Then I'm really tired of it because it's a lot of work also.
And do you still like your work afterwards, or do you look at back and say
some of them some of them I'm really happy with it because but then I'm more looking like sort of the energy level going through the whole process, if that feels all right, like, mm-hmm. you know, having a good time, then I'm happy.
But it's not that you look at it and you say, oh, I should have put a little more time in that bit.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. But that's more like a time-driven
thing.
There's a lot of commercial jobs that only allow you to work for 3 or 4 days on something, which is ridiculous. I have no idea how all the world functions with this 3-4 day limit. Like, so we came together and we think you should have the job and you have 3 days to do it.
And for example, you designed the wedding dress, I think, of your wife.
Yeah, I was nervous.
How was it? Did you surprise her with it?
No.
She knew about it.
Oh, yeah, she knew about it.
Oh, okay, you couldn't get away with a surprise.
No. No, and also, no, because the dressmaker, who is not me, I didn't make the dress, I only made the textile.
Yeah.
He had to fit it.
To fit it, yeah. Okay. And how was the...
I was so nervous when she came into the room. I was like, oh my God, did she have
you? It was like a traditional like fitting and you were there waiting. And
no, there was like a weird thing where I couldn't see the dress, but I had to see the textile.
So that was kept also a secret.
Yeah, which is
but
fun.
But how was the... you revealed the pattern when it was finished?
I gave it to the guy who made it, and then I just saw it when she was walking up the aisle.
Ah, okay, so you never saw her reaction when she first saw the pattern?
Yeah, because no, I wanted to show her the pattern, because I wanted her to feel, at ease with it.
Yeah.
I would never pull something like that on my wife.
No, I don't know.
I made you something.
Your marriage. Okay.
Yeah, it's just the beginning, so we don't want to.
Yeah, and she was also involved in the color picking, because, and that was a really smart move of her.
So you saw the dress completely on her when she just came down the
aisle. Yeah, she walked down the aisle, and then it's the first time I saw it.
Yeah, and you mentioned you were nervous.
Of course. No, I was nervous getting the package, because I just sent it out to Germany where they print it.
Yeah.
And I've never worked with these people before. So I didn't know. I had the address from a fashion designer. Mm-hmm. She said, it's okay. And there was a lot of blue and green in there. And blue is not a problem, but green, as you know, is a really problematic color to print. So I was really nervous that it would be mucky. And then it came out, it was brilliant. Like really, really well printed. And I was like, so happy.
Wow.
So that was a good day. Yeah, and then I saw it at walking up the aisle, and I was, it's a weird thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Altogether a wedding, but then also that dress. So
And did you have a special suit also? No.
Did you design? Oh my God, that was such a. I called one of my best friends. I need a suit. I don't have a suit. And then we went shopping everywhere. I couldn't find anything. And then at the last moment, I found a somewhat good suit. Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't design the?
No, that was too much. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like stress levels.
Okay.
Up to here. Yeah.
Wow, that must be incredible to have.
That was fantastic.
Piece,
yes,
like
I was
that.
So happy for her because. I wanted to give her something special, on this day. And there's so much things, you get in a sort of turmoil of stuff that needs to happen when you get into a wedding. So there's not really a lot of personalized things that you can do if you're not really stepping into something. And we didn't want to do that because, it should also be an easy wedding in a way. So I was really happy we could add something to the whole thing that was a personalized thing between us too.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Is it hard to find clients? I mean, is it hard to find work for you? Because can imagine it's so specific.
I don't really know that yet. Mm. I have a lot of work, but the output, I'm a one-man band. So sometimes I look at the output and I'm like, could be more, Like I've made posters for a long time. When you make posters, there's something going on every month, like boop, 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 boop. And now I get bigger assignments, and bigger assignments also mean that they take 1 year or 2 years before they come out, and there's a lot of process stuff. So I feel that I'm making more money, but I'm also, the output is less, and I feel a little bit, I don't know what to feel about that yet. I feel that's a little bit of a shame too. And not be, and also feel that if a a process is too long, a lot of soul gets stamped out of a project. But I'm really happy with the clients that I do have. They allow me to freestyle whatever I want, and I tell them in advance, like, this could be really weird what I'm going to make, so be prepared for that, and are you okay with that? And then, you know, it's a nervous first two steps, and then they see, I do really listen to them, and then make sure that whatever they need is in there with all the weird stuff that's extra, something like that.
The directness of that poster design, you make something and it's a very limited time, is that also an addiction that you're sort of used to, like, to seeing?
Oh yeah, especially with also screen printing it myself, like going through that whole phase where you also really produce 100 or 120 posters, that's something I really love. Yeah, I miss that sometimes. I also have now a screen printer that does it for me, and it's not the same. You know, I just get this big roll and then I unroll it and I'm like, oh.
You miss the physicality also.
Yeah.
And is there a job that you really would like to sink your teeth in? Like, really a job like that would be like the dream job for me?
I would love to do some more festival work, because I like the temporary thing that there is, and that things get destroyed afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not, you know, I'm not really an identity kind of person, because who wants to look at that stuff for a long period? So I really like doing a lot of funky stuff that happens once and then gets out of the history. Oh, and so you had to be there to
experience.
Yeah, I love that very much. Because it also allows you to do more, use more fantasy kind of things. Yeah.
Should we wrap it up?
How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, yeah, that question.
So you heard it before.
I'm happy if my work gets scattered throughout the planet, and that's it. That is like a fantasy I have, where, you know, screen prints of mine, they get somewhere on the globe. And then that is a really nice thing to have. Like, somewhere there's a piece of paper that I made. So yeah, that's ideal. That's a good, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Type Radio.
Now we are about to
This is Type Radio.
Now we are about to
Type Radio.
Now we're talking.